we frankly have a dysfunctional global monetary system.
They now have to keep printing or we crash.
We've got this ticking time bomb.
Talking gold with the one and only Andrew Maguire.
Welcome to Live from the Vault.
Hi, my name is Shane Moran, and I'll be your host for this week's episode of Live from the Vault, the show that goes beyond the headlines and uncovers the truth about the precious metals industry and about the effects of the global economy in these historic times. With exclusive access to experts and insiders, we reveal information and insights that you simply can't get anywhere else. Now, this week, we have the one and only Andrew Maguire, precious metals expert and whistleblower, in the house. And to help him pull back the curtain, we'll be joined by industry expert and producer of Grid Down Power Up, Mr. David Tice. And David is the co-manager of the Precious Metals Equity Investment Management Fund. And he's also producing an important documentary on the vulnerability of the power grid. It's called Grid Down Power Up. And with that, let's head over to the UK and talking gold with the one and only Andrew Maguire and our special guest, David Tice. Over to you, Andy.
Well, thanks, Shane, for the great introduction. Now, with that said, David, welcome. It's such an honor to have you come back to visit us on your visit today. The last time we had you on, you really we got so many responses, and I think there's so much we can talk about because there's so much you do. And my goodness me, I mean, it dates me a bit, but I remember I used to love watching you on CNBC appearances. I mean, this was when the dot-com bubble was going on. I think Brown's bottom hadn't even happened, and you were out there every day, and you were out there and on a regular basis pushing back against the narrative, saying, you know, gold, you must be buying gold. And, I mean, no one was earlier than you on calling that. And then, of course, we all know what happened after the dot-com bubble, and we all know what happened after Brown sold the gold at $250. But thank you for coming back. And can we start, please, by what really got our attention last time? This was actually mind-blowing stuff to me. You shared with us an award-winning documentary, and I think I'd really like you to it's called Grid Down Power Up. And could you, for those people that haven't seen it, and obviously we're going to link it, those people that haven't seen it, this is chilling to me that people don't understand this. And please, can you tell us maybe an overview of really what this film, this documentary, is about?
Well, first of all, thanks for the invite, Andy, and I would never miss an invite with you. Look forward to breaking bread soon. We certainly have had some great history and memories.
Yes.
And thank you for kind words. So this is really a third career for me where I became a producer director of this documentary, and I founded a film company called Paul Revere Films. So I'm literally trying to wake up, you know, the American people and the British people, although this film really does apply more to Americans, and it is Grid Down, Power Up. And so we were lucky enough to get Dennis Quaid as our narrator. It's an hour long. It's available on YouTube today. We hope to be available on Amazon in the not too distant future. This film talks about four major threats to our power grid. And we rely on electricity for virtually everything. And we are very complacent in this modern world, thinking that when we shut our refrigerator, it's going to keep food cold. When we plug in our iPhone, we're going to be able to get power. We count on our municipal water system to provide fresh water. We count on everything electricity. And our electricity utilities, you know, frankly, have not done as good of a job as they should have done. There's been regulatory capture, which means the industry essentially owns the regulators, and four major threats are a physical attack, a massive cyber attack, an EMP attack, electromagnetic disturbance, or a geomagnetic disturbance would all knock out the power grid potentially for a long period of time. And if we don't have electricity in modern society, the EMP Commission was founded and it operated for 17 years at the behest of the U.S. Congress. And they found that as many as 90% of Americans would die if we don't have electricity on a nationwide basis for an extended period of time.
Well, I mean, this is mind-boggling stuff. And the thing is, you've talked about, it could be a solar flare. It could be an EMP, as you talk about. And we're pushing the envelope here at the moment, David. I mean, this side of the pond, things are getting a bit tense with all the wars going on. And I think, you know, probably the most logical form of attack would perhaps be an EMP.
So you talk about the wars. We characterize this as being the most dangerous period of time that we've had since the Cuban Missile Crisis. Mm. And essentially, we know we have Ukraine, Russia. Putin is furious at us for arming the Ukrainians. Essentially, we have Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran, you know, teaming up against United States and Israel. That's likely to come to another level after Ramadan ends. Then we have China versus Taiwan. And Xi has said he wants to go down in history as the most powerful, most successful leader in Chinese 5,000 years of history. Well, that's going to require him reunifying with Taiwan. And he's explicitly postulated that. You look at the fact that China has declared a people's war against the United States back in 2019. And therefore, we have essentially three theaters of war, and you combine that with our open southern border. And there's all these stories and film footage of military-aged single men without families coming across carrying similar backpacks, canteens, etc. And it doesn't require much imagination to determine these very likely are likely to be sleeper cells that are poised to obey orders that might come in relative to critical civilian infrastructure in the United States.
Yeah, no, this is something that we're, something that we're encountering globally as well. And I basically call it the weaponization of migration. And it really, there is no other plausible explanation as to why one would allow, when you have passports, you and I need a passport. For me to visit to the US, I require visas. I need a full check of my background. And yet, as you just say, in this country, we see it with people just arriving on boats. We don't know who they are, single men of fighting age. You far worse from what I see in the States, because you're talking about how many hundreds of thousands of people have entered the US without any kind of checks whatsoever.
So I think the number that's come across has been 7 million.
Wow.
And there are some kind of checks, but there are a lot of people that are not having any checks. And certainly are we've essentially impeached Secretary of Homeland Security Mayorkas, you know, because his lack of, you know, doing the right thing for Homeland Security. And we essentially have a nation with an open border. And let's just pray that we get through this.
Well, I understand that that obviously you have an election coming up, and there's quite distinctly two sides, two completely different polar opposite views on this process, and then you've got Trump very likely leading the way here, and it may be that he gets in, or maybe it isn't. But I understand that if he does get in, he made quite a statement that he would actually immediately shut the border and he would immediately start deporting people. And is that viable? Do you think that would happen?
I think that is probably his most likely cause of action. And I would like to say that my movie is truly bipartisan, and I did bring up one of the threat vectors being the open border, which is more of a partisan issue. I'm not sure why it is, but if you eliminate that issue, our position is that we need to protect our critical civilian infrastructure. And that is as bipartisan as it gets. And in fact, our film talks about in 2018, the California legislature that is dominated by Democrats passed unanimously two pieces of legislation imploring U.S. Congress and the U.S. president to protect our grid against EMP and GMD.
So, you know, we always have to think, okay, well, obviously this is all about education. This is all about providing information to people so they can make their own decisions and hopefully make better decisions for themselves. And so the first thing that pops into my mind is, I mean, should you do have this worst case scenario and the power grid goes down, you can't just refire a power grid, can you? You just cannot just restart it. What kind of time period would, I mean, depending on the way it went down, but it's certainly, you wouldn't be able to just switch it back on. So would you be talking about weeks or months?
Well, there we're getting into very complex subjects. There's something called a black start. And if all the power grid goes down and there are, you know, mechanisms and procedures to do a black start, but it is highly risky. It is highly kind of theoretical at this point how we do it. And it has not really been tested. But one of the issues we talk about in the film is the vulnerability of our high voltage transformers. And these transformers, you know, weigh several hundred tons each. And they are manufactured largely abroad. We have very small domestic manufacturing capability in the United States. And there is a backlog currently of 4 to 6 years for these high voltage transformers. So let's say the grid's not down completely, but our transformers are out, you know, then and can't be replaced, we could be at a nationwide power outage for a significant period of time. And frankly, people have talked about it coming back in 9 months. The thing is, people aren't going to be working. They aren't going to be going into the transformer shop. They're going to be, you know, at home, you know, with an AR-15, whatever food they have left, trying to protect their families. And therefore, it's hard to say how quickly if we'll come back at all.
So when I was living on the West Coast, in Vancouver, it was quite common for people to put earthquake supplies away. Waterproof containers. It was just logical that, look, you know, you don't know. One day you could wake up. It's happened. And I think I remember very, very strongly in what we were doing was you put in what will keep and you try and build something that will get you through a period of time, at the very least. Unfortunately, when we were, weren't armed, but to protect those things, but which I think I understand that you might have to do. But the other thing that we needed to do was make sure we had some gold coins and silver coins, because that would have then been the only form of barter. Because really, as I know, David, you're the one that you've been talking about this for as long as I can remember, that basically when you look at a gold or a silver coin or bar, all the energy that was ever required to make it is in it. It's actually already existing in it. So therefore, it has no counterparty risk. Therefore, it becomes the ultimate bargaining, the ultimate barter tool. It could be to get somebody to dig a trench. You can measure the labor to take a chicken or to buy a chicken or whatever it might be, or even to buy yourself passage on a ship somewhere to get out of a situation. So it's interesting to me that this, what you're talking about, surely that must be a very similar. What do you I mean, obviously you can't advise people to do, but what would you suggest people do to prepare themselves for the worst case scenario?
Well, frankly, they should have a bolt hole or a plan B, option, because the problem is if the power goes out, it will be almost zombie apocalypse without the zombie. And population density is your enemy in those kind of scenarios. And you should have food and water and shelter and, an arsenal and ammunition, frankly, and have a core group of people with hopefully some different skill sets and that you can get along with to be able to survive. In terms of barter, agreed that this will be gold and silver coins, have provided great, barter functions for thousands of years. And if you're having to, swap, your energy and your talents for something else that you want, gold and silver, has a great functionality there.
Yeah. So really, this is, obviously one can't, you can't eliminate risks like this happening, but we can at least take steps. It's about personal responsibility. Having your eyes open, not putting your head in the sand and saying, well, okay, if this happens or that happens, really, I need to do what I can do, at least the very least I can do, to make sure my family and my and that we can survive as long as possible through a situation like this until perhaps a solution is found. But you also mentioned a social side here, which is interesting, because you talked about like-minded people getting together. You talked about sharing resources. This is something that I would think would be how the most powerful way of getting through a situation like this, and to have a proper structure of people that you can trust.
Exactly. And actually, I'm a investor, board member, and a joint venture partner of a entity that was designed to provide, this bolt hole plan B type option in the country for individuals in the United States. So we don't have a reach to the UK at this point, but people need to be
considering all kind of options. And I hope and pray I'm wrong, but I'm a probability guy. I'm a trade-offs guy. And I look at some of these, you know, explicit statements that have been made by Xi and Putin and North Korea's chairman. And Americans are hated, really, around the world by a bunch of bad guys. And they despise our American hegemony.
Yeah. And I mean, hey, understandably, hegemony comes and goes. It moves. I mean, and you, when you think about it, to me, when impartially, just completely impartially, what we're dealing with is when we look at the BRICS members, we're looking at the global South versus this side of the universe. What we're looking at is a group of countries that don't really want to be in control of anything. They want to amalgamate all of their resources and have a free trade, borderless situation. It's not communism. This is actually capitalism, but in its best form. Because, for example, the BRICS 10 are meeting next month, and this is the first big meeting where we understand the Glasnevin's white paper has just been greenlighted, and it's going to introduce two currencies. One is related to an SDR. That's going to take a long time to get involved because obviously foreign currencies, different volumes, it's going to be a very difficult process. However, the second currency and the lion's share of what's going to happen is going to come through as Glasnevin's second option is a commodity gold-backed commodity currency where you can now literally digitize it and you can then, it's on the blockchain, and you can create a currency where, and bearing in mind that we're talking, these guys control between these BRICS 10 and growing, Indonesia, Nigeria, all of these countries are beginning to wake up to the fact, hang on, this is a solution for us. So basically what they're saying is, well, we control or consume the bulk of the energy and oil trades, either providing it or using it. And therefore, that is a multi-trillion dollar market. Now, if you suddenly make it tradable as a commodity, or even grains, or whatever it might be that you have resources of, and you don't need the West. You don't need the West. You have a currency where you can exchange this, but the West needs it. And this is a scary thought, because if you suddenly price oil in gold, I mean, what is the price of oil in gold? I mean, goodness me. I mean, it isn't just $80, because $80 might buy you a barrel of oil now. But if you price that in gold and a quality hard currency like commodities, an amalgamation, what is the real price? In dollars terms, it could be 3, 4, 5 times that. But yet, the guys who have the gold, to them, it is just a trade. Interesting thoughts, David.
So let's talk about that just for a second. Andy, I talked about American hegemony and the fact that we have operated with the dollar being the world's reserve currency for a number of years. And the BRIC nations and leadership have railed against, you know, how bad that is for emerging markets. And frankly, it has been. And we talk about the fact the dollar has been, you know, the most attractive currency because it's the least dirty shirt in the laundry hamper. But we frankly have a dysfunctional global monetary system, I think. And I think a lot of experts would, you know, concur with that view. And the BRIC nations, you know, and that
group.
It just expanded by five, I guess, just in the last couple months.
Yeah.
And now the Russian guy is the new chairman of that group. And so there's been this behind the scenes, you know, discussions we know, you know, between the BRIC nations about trying to, you know, do something about this dysfunctional global dollar-based system. And we do believe, you know, somehow it's going to get back to gold and other commodities.
Yeah. And of course, you know, when you think about it, it suddenly makes sense because when you think that, and again, we're very close, as you know, we're very close to the wholesale markets, very understand a lot of what's going on the wholesale markets themselves. And we're very confident in saying that China's real gold reserves are closer to 40,000 tons. Russia's probably 20,000 tons. And the Chinese citizens themselves own 20,000 tons. Now, you can, in a warlike condition, and Xi has said himself, and he walks around with a copy of The Art of War in his back pocket, and basically, if a push comes to shove, they can consolidate that resource to back this currency. And in a warlike situation, you can bring in, and we've even seen the plan, they announced the plan, which is what we would do is we could even lease, we could take possession of the citizens' 20,000 tons and provide a really beneficial lease return on it. And it wouldn't be like the kind of leases that we have over here where you're trying to suppress a price and you're selling it into the market and you hope like hell you can buy it back. This is about putting resources together. Now, when you compare that to take the US for a minute, 8,133 tons of what we are certain, given just empirical evidence, says it's rehypothecated. Because I mean, good God, when Germany wanted to repatriate just 300 tons, it was going to take 7 years. I mean, they wouldn't even let the German Bundesbank in to look at the vaults. So we have to assume there's very little gold, real gold, that's unencumbered in America. Yet you've got all this gold to back a currency that is definitely going to, and people underestimate the degree of de-dollarization that's going to provide.
Exactly. And my geopolitical and monetary knowledge pales to yours, Andrew. And so I know that this is something you've studied a lot, and your viewers and listeners that get to watch, you know, Behind the Vault, you know, are, you know, extremely lucky to have you help guide them through all this.
Well, we're just trying to open people's eyes. This is why it's so important to have the likes of yourself come on and provide, you know, the more pieces of the jigsaw, and then we assemble these pieces of the jigsaw together. And now you mentioned this company, or this, that you've formed a company which is addressing the potential social side of perhaps, or in the case of the worst case situation. How do people access that? How can people possibly access that?
Yes, so it's called Fortitude Ranch, and our website is fortituderanch.com, and it is headed up by, you know, an amazing patriot who was a Air Force Academy grad, as his PhD from Harvard. He did his dissertation on how to prepare NATO troops against fallout. He advised David Petraeus one-on-one in Iraq. And so we have seven ranches in various states across the nation. And it's a little bit like a country club model. And you can have a room, you know, with a, you know, toilet and a sink, or actually a more Spartan room. But you can have your
family all show up there, and in your room, you could have stored your key pharmaceuticals and your favorite Scotch whiskey and your eyeglasses, you know, and you would be ready to go. And, you know, people are going to be put to work, you know, when we're there, because it'll be survival. But we should have a diversity of skill sets, you know, on those ranches, such that hopefully we'll have a dentist and a doctor and, you know, some spiritual, you know, professionals, and, you know, we'll try to get through this.
This is fantastic information. I had no idea about this, David. When we spoke last time, I had no idea. I think this is opening a lot of people's eyes. So I can just imagine in a situation like that, if you're taking this kind of prep, then this would also provide you security, because obviously one of the things you've just said is, like, if you're on your own and you've got people coming to take what food you have because they haven't stored it, then at least you'd be, as you say, you'd have a degree of security that you could never really have got on your own. And I would encourage people, I'm going to go and have a look at it, even though I'm not based in the US, but it's the kind of thing that might spark other people to do something similar. What a great idea, David. And are you a founder of this?
No, I came onto it later, but Dr. Drew Miller is the founder, and he's a real patriot. He has his heart in the right spot, and he wanted to provide a infrastructure where more modest means individuals, you know, could have a place to go. And we hear stories about, you know, Bill Gates, you know, all the rich tech entrepreneurs have their hideouts, et cetera, you know, and underground, and, you know, more modest means individuals need an option. And that's what this is providing.
Well, I think one of the other things that I've followed you over many of the years is it takes a lot of skills to be a short seller. And to be a short seller, you have to be quite a different person. This is not the natural order of things for most people. They just simply think you have to buy something to sell it.
Are you saying I have to have a screw loose? Which it probably
No. I used to watch you on CNBC on a regular basis, upsetting them, very much upsetting them, and saying you're bearish on this and you're bearish on that, and always promoting gold at every instance. But an absolute expert, I mean, really, talk about skill set. To recognize, to be a short seller, you have to be pretty savvy. And when it comes to, and you know what to look for, etc. But when it comes to gold and silver, David, the short sellers have been the likes of the US Fed. But here's the problem. Every other central bank globally, including the Bank of International Settlements, when they made gold a first-tier asset class, and not COMEX gold, but every other, but foreign exchange gold. So if I'm a liquidity provider for the multi-trillion-dollar FX gold market, as of the 1st of January 2023, I had to have the bullion there. I had to have it. Now, the only central bank still fighting the price of gold, every other central bank is buying gold. And there's no doubt about that. Not just what's on the record, but monetary gold, you don't have to report it. And we know that monetary gold is exiting and going into central bank coffers, and it doesn't have to be reported at all. So now you've got the Fed. Now, as a short seller, you're thinking this. Okay, as a short seller, essentially, the Fed is the only short seller of gold on the planet Earth right now. How can this end when every single central bank is buying gold? Do you think, I mean, I have ideas on this, but do you think that they may have to find something else to fight the war of the dollar being benchmarked by something they cannot control, because you have to have physical to deliver it.
Or
are they going to, now that they've sanctioned Bitcoin ETFs, for example, can they bring that volatility and gaming into what is another competitor to the dollar, which you can just print your way out of, as opposed to trying to find physical to deliver? What are your thoughts? This is just what I'm seeing.
Well, I am following Bitcoin, not super closely, but I've been worried about, Bitcoin being really backed by nothing. And certainly there's finite supply that people are excited about. And here we are nearing 100,000, although we had a flash crash yesterday with some fear about Tether, which is the biggest stable coin. And so I'm a big believer that there's a massive problem with Tether. And Tether is essentially the money market fund for, the crypto world. And, Tether is still not audited, and they're utilizing something called attestations. And along with a number of other professionals, we're saying, let's have a damn audit. And JP Morgan has been talking recently about the risk to the entire crypto market from the lack of transparency and the lack of, really compliance from Tether. And George Noble and Grant Williams and another gentleman, have been talking for a while about the fact that this Tether almost counterfeiting might have contributed to the recent price increases in Bitcoin. And therefore, I'm quite concerned about this.
Very interesting stuff. I hadn't thought of that. This is again, something to vend into the equation, this constantly evolving equation. But I think, because let's face it, after 2 years, 3 years after Nixon took gold off the gold standard, and the COMEX, which was already trading, also vended in gold. And it was pretty openly discussed at the time, well, what we can do is create a lot of volatility. We can create synthetic supply. We can control, because obviously it had to find a way of stopping people exchanging their dollars for gold at 35 bucks and whatever it was. So I mean, which is ironically, it's what we're seeing now, but they're willing to pay a lot more, because when you weigh out the whole picture, it's actually cheaper now in relative terms than it was then. So it's really interesting to me that this is now almost full circle, back to where we were. But because the COMEX was created to control gold, it wouldn't surprise me that the whole reason the Bitcoin ETFs were sanctioned to trade, that it wouldn't be a good way, a good mechanism to also, because it's compete. Look, we're talking about another thing that is competing against the dollar. In other words, Bitcoin is benchmarking itself against the dollar. Gold always has benchmarked itself against the dollar. So to me, when you suddenly see a rogue trader sell 400 Bitcoins in less than an hour, that to me was like, hey, I've seen this rodeo before, but it was gold. So I wouldn't be surprised. It would not surprise me in the least if, because now, whereas Bitcoin, you can't know who's behind it, but you sure as hell know the stops of the ETF holders. And so you could definitely, with position concentration, which is how they've always controlled everything, with position concentration in a siloed market, you can actually, to me, this is interesting. I mean, to me, I'm only just really beginning to get onto this gig, because I'm very suspicious. I'm saying it may not be the case, but I'm very suspicious, and it wouldn't surprise me if there, as you say, and combined with what you've just said, there could be a big problem.
There could be. And this is going to be an interesting world over the next couple of years. Patrick Bet-David, you know, was recently quoted saying 2024 is going to be the year of chaos. And I think on the geopolitical front, in terms of where we are with Russia and China and their two adversaries, the fact that China's economy is in dire straits, and the fact that we have, you know, Chinese demographics, you know, being in a horrific position. And then the fact that we have on the geocurrency, you know, a perspective where the BRICS have doubled, and, you know, the BRICS are, you know, very, you know, opposed to U.S. dollar hegemony and this gold-backed, you know, central system. Here we had gold break through $2,000, where it seemed like there'd been a, whenever bullion reached $2,000, it was knocked back down. And I know you and I are both believers in gold suppression, and we're both personal friends with Bill Murphy, who runs GATTA. And so I think he has been right on. But here we've had gold, you know, surpass 2,000, and then it stayed there, and it went through 2,100. It's gone through 2,150. And it seems like there's a sovereign bid, you know, underneath the gold price that is not letting it fall. And an area that we love is precious metals miners, because these companies are selling at enormously cheap valuations today. And, you know, with the price of, you know, production, you know, between probably 1300 and 1600, a lot of money is being made by these miners at 2150.
And that's been another specialty of yours, many, many, many years, is gold miners. And I know you've had structures set around them that have been very sophisticated structures set around them. So can you tell us what are you doing? Because you mentioned a company that you head up, which actually really looks at that trade. Can you tell us a little bit about that, David?
So I've partnered with a gentleman, Garrick Moran, based in North Carolina. And so he's really a great mining analyst that's, involved in tearing apart these companies and on every conference call, you know, over the last 20 years. And we like the junior producers today, because you don't really need to take exploration risk. But even Newmont is one of the seniors, is extraordinarily cheap today. And we think that the mining companies are going to go through the roof. And there are decades when mining companies, precious metals mining companies, do extraordinarily well. The 30s, the 70s, and the 00s. And so I made a lot of money in Prudent Bear Fund between 2003 to 2008, you know, where we invested in mining companies. And that helped me offset some of the losses that the portfolio suffered from being short stocks, because mining stocks probably went up, you know, 600 some percent, you know, over that period. And we're going to have a period like that again. And these mining companies are selling at such cheap valuations in terms of price to cash flow, price to sales, even price to gap-oriented PE ratios.
Is that purely an institutional service, or can people come and visit and come and invest with that company?
No, individuals can find us. I'm on LinkedIn
and you can, you know, learn about, you know, our options there for sure.
That's really interesting. And I guess one of the last things I was going to cover is that Texas was one of the leading states that wanted to repatriate gold, wanted to make gold, recreate gold as money. And there's a big movement at the moment in the states, sound money movement. And I noticed, I saw the other day, Wisconsin was the latest state to end state taxes and on gold and silver. But Texas led the way here. Can you tell us what you're seeing about this sound money movement? Because obviously you're on that side of the pond. I hear a bit, but I really don't know an awful lot.
All right. So a group out of Dallas, which is Economic War Room, and I would encourage your listeners and viewers to go there. Kevin Freeman and Mike Carter are the two principals there, and they are actually working on a gold-backed currency, you know, utilize, and we have the Texas Bullion Depository, you know, outside of Austin. And these gentlemen are working with other state legislators, et cetera. So they have been talking about, you know, this state-backed, you know, where you could have an account, you know, with gold, and you would be able to, you know, have a credit card to be able to make transactions just with your gold account. And I wish I was, you know, better prepared to articulate this better, but I'd love you to have Kevin or Mike on your program. They would be, you know, great guests.
Yeah, exactly. I can see some partnerships there that would be opportunities, because that's something we're way down the road on, and you need facilities, backups, infrastructure for that. So it'd be great. I will do. And if you mention to them, then we'll definitely contact them and have a chat about, you know, coming on and talking about their work. And I'm sure that blends in with, I mean, there's a huge social side to what we're doing, all of us are doing here. And we're bringing, we're bringing sound money back into the forefront. And it really pleases me to see states in America, and more and more will do this, to actually re-monetizing gold and silver. And obviously then you need a mechanism to make it trade. But this is a process. And I think it really encourages me to see that, David. This is something that I welcome. It actually takes Americans to do this. It takes, because they have, I often say, this side of the pond, people are apathetic about these kind of things. It takes real drive. It takes, and when you've got a state behind you, and when you've got states doing stuff like this, it's encouraging. It involves, gets people to involve. So I see this as a really strong movement that is going to be the only thing that offsets what your government, the US Fed, is doing right now, which is opposing the rise in the price of gold, or attempting to. I see them giving up. I see them absolutely giving up when every other central bank on the planet Earth is buying gold. Hence, the price will keep going up. And it's been puzzling. Even Bloomberg, I have Bloomberg on a lot of the time, and they finally worked out. They were puzzling. Well, how come the ETFs are going down and the gold price is going up? Well, because you're losing all the paper money. Nobody, these CTAs that have been trading paper gold, but literally are bailing. And you know, they've got other things to play with, like Bitcoin ETFs and one thing and another. But while they were selling their ETF holdings, the price of gold's going up. And finally, they woke up. I think about a week ago, somebody on Bloomberg said, "Hey, this has to be central bank buying." No shit, Sherlock. I mean, honestly. But I mean, that's what's happening. So I think it's good that what is happening your side of the pond is offsetting a lot of what this idiot Fed is doing in trying to oppose the price of gold rising when they should be on board. The Bank of International Settlements already, the central bank of all central banks, already made gold Basel III compliant. Why? It's a first-year asset class. Why? I mean, suddenly it's being used what it says on the box. On the box it says it's a real asset hedge, you know, so which is something you purported long before anyone ever said it. And so you've got this side of the everything this side of the pond bullish for gold, and you've got, to me, it's mind-boggling that the only negative view on gold is still the I guess in an attempt to protect declining hegemony. Maybe that's the reason.
Well put. So these guys, Kevin and Michael, are phenomenal patriots, and they are working state by state. And there has been a great deal of reception for this, and people are going to be able to get, you know, a gold backed credit card, you know, and there are certain tax advantages for this. And again, I can't wait for you to have these gentlemen on.
Definitely going to do it. Definitely going to do it. David, look, I could spend the next 3 hours with you. I am coming back to Texas. We had a blast when I was there with you last time. You introduced me to some real Texas lifestyles there. I mean, a steak, when it has to be this thick, and you know what I mean. So we broke some bread. Want to come back? We're going to do this. We're going to talk a lot about gold, silver, and sound money. And thank you so much for all you bring to the table. And I'm going to encourage people to all your links will be put on the below this episode. I really do encourage people to land on it. Look at the movie. Look at some of the things you talked about. Blew my mind today. Like, I had no idea that you were putting together the social side of this as well. But thank you for all you do, and I really look forward to you joining us again, because it's been a year and it was too long.
I look forward to that, Andrew. Look forward to breaking bread with you here, and then thanks for that reach out about watching the film. So if I could encourage you, your viewers, to become a grid warrior, and therefore, if you like the film, we have the ability to where you can write letters and make phone calls. Now, I know you have listeners, viewers around the world, but your American viewers, especially, to be able to write your U.S. regulators, legislators, members of board of directors, and then tell your friends. Please tell 20, 30, 50 of your friends, and tell them to tell 50 of their friends. That would really help me.
Absolutely. And what I'm going to do is also look at some of those letters, and maybe we can adapt them for this side of the pond as well, because we have all got the same problem here.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for joining us. Bless you for joining us. And we look forward to seeing you again soon.
Okay. Me too, Andy. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Andrew McGuire, and special guest David Tice of Grid Down Power Up, for another fascinating discussion. And remember, buy physical, make sure it's one-to-one backed by physical, make sure it's insured also, and understand the difference between what Andy affectionately calls the casino paper gold and silver markets and the actual physical gold and silver markets. They're not the same. We talk about it every week on the show here. Don't be fooled. And there you have it. That's all we have for you today on another fascinating episode of Live from the Vault. Now, please help keep spreading the word about this channel by hitting that like button. Not now, but right now. You know, share this information and subscribe if you're not already subscribed. And if you want to be notified in real time as each episode goes live, just hit that bell right there and you'll be notified. And with that, we'll see you next time on Live from the Vault. See you then.